Chapter 43. Bermuda's North Shore. Kurt's priority was stabilizing Miar, who had fallen unconscious and was suffering from mild hypothermia and the head wound. Kurt eased Miar onto the floor of the boat, dressed the head wound, and strapped him down with a cargo net. He placed a life preserver under Miar's head as a pillow and covered him with a pair of thick towels. "That's the best I can do for you right now," he said to the unconscious man. Kurt went to the radio and dialed in the high-frequency band. "Joe, this is Kurt. Do you read?" There was no response. "Come in, amigo. Tell me where you're at and I'll come pick you up." Nothing but silence. If Joe hadn't retrieved his helmet, communications would be impossible. He switched tactics. "Priya, this is Kurt," he said, transmitting again. "I need you to ping Joe's transponder and give me a fix on him. He's in the water but not responding." Waiting in painful silence, Kurt checked the transmitter to make sure it was operating correctly, and then pressed transmit again. "Priya, come in, this is Kurt." The sound of the sea breeze and the waves lapping against the side of the boat were all he heard. "Forget this," Kurt said, hanging up the microphone. He fired up the engine, pulled the anchor in, and pushed the throttle forward. The Pavati began to move, and Kurt steered to port, accelerating and heading back toward the waters above the sunken and obliterated LNG carrier. Flicking through a battery of switches, he soon had every light in the boat shining. He grabbed the radio once again. "Joe, if you can hear this, I'm going to make a direct line between where we parked and the wreck. If you're in the water, wave me down." With the boat at quarter speed, Kurt pulled out the night vision scope and scanned the area ahead. He was looking for Joe, but he noticed the freighter was no longer moored by the marine buoy. He looked to the horizon, but there were several ships to the north, and he couldn't tell which, if any of them, was the freighter. Kurt really didn't care. The only thing that mattered at this point was finding Joe. He slowed down as he moved into an area of floating wreckage. Despite a slow, careful search through every bit of floating debris he could find, there was no sign of his friend. Circling around, he called for help once more. "Priya, this is Kurt. You're supposed to be on the radio. Joe is missing and probably injured. I need you to locate him for me." At long last, the radio crackled to life with a response. A female voice came over the speaker. "Your friend Joe is dead," the voice said coldly. "You killed him by destroying my laboratory. I hope it was worth it to you." "Tessa," Kurt said in recognition. "Yes," she said. "That's my name. And I now know yours. Kurt Austin." She dragged the name out as she spoke it, but followed it up quickly. "You can imagine who told me and what we had to do to her to get her to speak. This little helper of yours is tougher than she looks." Kurt's priorities changed instantly. Tessa had Priya. There was no point in asking how. He turned the wheel and gunned the throttle, setting a course back toward the great sound. "So now you're adding kidnapping to your crimes," Kurt said. "That's not going to play well when they bring you in." "You're laughable," she said. "There's no one here to bring me in. Even if there was, it'll be too late by the time they act. I'll be off this island in 5 minutes, and you, Kurt Austin, will never see me again." Kurt knew Tessa wouldn't stay in Bermuda. Even if the Prime Minister of the island was in her pocket, he would rapidly switch sides with the full weight of the U.S. government and the world community coming down on him. "It's over for you," Kurt said. "I'll have U.S. Navy divers on that site in the morning and an international warrant out for your arrest by lunchtime." Her pitch went up. "The only things coming to an end are the oil age and this young woman's life, if you try to stop me." Kurt had every intention of stopping her. His boat was racing at full speed, flying across the waves. It would only take a small amount of damage to keep the Monarch on the water. He would come up with a way to cause that damage by the time he got to it. "Think about it," Kurt said. "The world is not going to bow down to you or let you hold it hostage. Every country on Earth needs oil. That makes you everyone's enemy." The reply came with great confidence. "I'm afraid you have it backward and upside down," she said. We've already infected half the world's major oil fields. Some of them are only now beginning to experience the slowdown. But trust me, the progression is unstoppable, and things will soon get rapidly worse. In a few months, most of the world's oil will be trapped and useless. It will be unreachable without causing disasters like what happened to the Alpha Star. And the bacteria will multiply and grow as long as there's oil in the ground to feed on. All of which means, I'm not the problem, I'm the solution. Trust me, the world will embrace me long after you've been swept aside. Kurt heard every word she said, along with a high-pitched whine in the background. The Monarch's jet engines were spooling up. She would be gone in a matter of minutes. He hung the microphone up and concentrated on his course. With his craft moving at breakneck speed, he'd almost reached the entrance to the great sound. Turning toward the shore, he angled across Spanish Point, cutting it so close that spray from the boat washed across the coastal road. He was still several miles from Tessa's compound, but the aircraft would need a long stretch of water to take off. Instead of heading toward her island, he cut across the great sound, aiming for a spot where he could intercept her. By the time he spotted the Monarch, it was already moving. He saw the uplit tails, the floodlights in the wings, and the nose illuminating the water. The aircraft was out of the bay and taxiing into position for its takeoff run. Kurt continued westward, crossing the bay, weaving around a sailboat and between several of the many yachts anchored there. Beyond these vessels, he found himself in the channel reserved especially for the Monarch to take off from and land in. He carved a white wake into the sea, turning hard to the south. The Monarch was a mile away, picking up speed and heading north. The radio crackled. "You think we don't see you out there?" Tessa's voice sounded both angry and uncomfortable. Clearly, when pressured, her choice was aggression. "Get in our way and we'll run you down. I'll crush you like an insect." Kurt grabbed the microphone once more. "Good luck flying with a giant hole in your bow. You won't even get off the water." Kurt doubted Tessa would turn, but he gambled on the pilot's being more rational. He kept the throttle to the firewall and the nose of the boat pointed at the oncoming behemoth. It thundered toward him, the roar of its six monstrous engines growing louder by the second and soon drowning out even the rumble of the Pavati's V8. Kurt pressed forward, shielding his eyes as the plane's lights washed over him. Inside the Monarch, the pilots were stricken with fear. "He's not turning," one said. "Neither can we," the other pilot answered. "I'm cutting the throttle." "No," Tessa shouted. "Cavitation now." The co-pilot hit a switch and the vents beneath the aircraft opened. Huge volumes of compressed air flooded through the thousands of tiny holes on the bottom of the plane. In an instant, the water's grip was broken and the Monarch leapt into the air. Kurt never saw the plane leave the water. The light was too bright, but suddenly the glare tilted skyward, and the Monarch was thundering overhead. It cleared him by 10 feet, though the jet blast swept in and hit him from the rear, and the vortex behind the plane nearly threw the Pavati over. The boat skipped twice. Kurt corrected for the turbulence and kept it from rolling. He backed the throttle down and sped onto the smooth water of the Monarch's wake. There, the boat slowed and settled. Kurt took it through a quarter turn and cut the throttle completely. Glancing to the north, Kurt watched the Monarch climbing and turning. All at once, its lights went out, and the great plane vanished into the night. Joe was gone. Priya was gone. And all Kurt had to show for it was an obliterated vessel at the bottom of the sea and an unconscious, possibly comatose scientist. He picked up the microphone and held the talk switch down. "I know you can hear me, Tessa. So hear this. It doesn't matter how far you go, where you hide, or who your friends are. I will find you and bring you down, even if I have to hunt you to the ends of the earth to do it."